Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
MintMobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 531.24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
Wow.
Hello and welcome to the Abroad Japan podcast, probably the best way of learning about life in Japan without actually being in Japan. I'm your host, Chris Broad, and we're joined this week by not Pete Donaldson, because he is away on holiday. If you listened to the last episode, you'll know Pete's on a much-needed break. We've been doing this podcast 2.5 years now, and he's never missed a single episode. I've missed one. Guilty of that. He's never missed a single one until a few days ago. He's on holiday. We thought we'd give him a break for once, and instead, stepping in for the great Pete Donaldson is Charlotte in Japan. How are you doing, Charlotte?
Hello. Thanks for having me back.
Good to see you again. Good to see you. We are in Tokyo at the moment, and I was looking for a co-host, looking for someone who could fill the big boots of Pete Donaldson.
I'm not sure if I meet those standards, but I'll try my best.
And you were the only one in Tokyo at the time.
I see.
But, I mean, you were my first choice to come on the podcast, and it's just been great. But no, seriously, thanks for coming on. And we got some questions you guys have sent in to Sharla. At the end of last week's episode, I asked you to send any questions and we'll be reading those out later on. But why are you in Tokyo, Sharla? What are you doing down here still?
I'm still packing packages for my business.
Right.
And after that, I'm actually off to Hakone to visit a very special cat hotel.
Cat hotel?
Cat hotel. They rent you a cat for the night. You start off in like a cat cafe setting with a bunch of cats, and you decide which one's your favorite, and then you can take it back to your room for the night, and it stays with you.
Sounds like a cat brothel.
It's horrible.
Well, that is your description of what you just said. It's all a bit sinister and unpleasant.
Cat brothel.
Well, you go into a place.
Nobody else would have thought that.
You choose.
What is wrong with you?
Something. You take it back to your room. There's something quite awful about that. But that is not a nice opening to the podcast. But it sounds good. I like that. That's cool. So what is for people that want to have a cat but aren't sure if they want?
Yeah, exactly. It's for people that are thinking about buying a cat themselves, but they're not sure if they can handle it, don't know if they know how to properly take care of a cat.
Wow.
They just want a night to experience what it's like. Stop it.
A night at the cat brothel.
Stop it.
Good God. I must say it sounds quite nice. Sounds kind of cool. Yeah. And are they like stray cats or where are they?
I actually don't know. I guess we'll find out next week.
Wonderful.
Yeah, I'll be making a video, so come check it out on my channel if you're interested.
Very good. We'll definitely get on that. As for me, I just put out a video actually doing an ambient video, like an ASMR style video of the Japanese countryside. I don't know if you saw about a month or two ago, I did a road trip style video driving across Japan in the new car, and there was a beautiful piece of scenery in Yamagata Prefecture. These rice fields, a nice little shrine, this little hamlet, and in the background, the towering Mount Chokai. And I put that shot in the video, but I keep finding myself going back to it. Something quite beautiful about that shot. It encapsulates everything I like about Japan and the countryside. And so I went back to it, pulled out the footage from the 100 gigabytes of B-roll from that video, and turned it into like a 30-minute episode where you can sort of listen to the ambient sounds of nature and the little stream in the foreground, and so it's really kind of relaxing. I made it for myself, really.
That's
therapy.
The kind of thing people need nowadays. It's been a stressful year, so if you're gonna start making those videos, now's the time.
Absolutely, really. Yeah. And I mean, yeah, like I said, I mean, I made it kind of for myself as some sort of therapy, and I wasn't originally gonna share it online, but it's done quite well, and yeah, it might be something to explore further. I'd like the idea of just going somewhere in Japan with a beautiful backdrop or kind of setting and just setting up the camera and filming it. So check it out. It's on the Abroad Perspective channel, where I also posted a video last week of Tokyo at night in a cyberpunky atmosphere. It's kind of my experimental channel. Do you have anything like that?
I used to, and then it became my main channel. So now I don't anymore. I started using my old Charlotte in Japan channel again, but just for live streams. So yeah, I don't really have an experimental channel. I suppose I could use Charlotte in Japan for that if I really wanted to, but...
See, I guess a broad perspective is my playground. I think it's with YouTube, right? For those of you who aren't aware of the world of YouTube, you've got to always try and have videos that do well, right? There's always this pressure to put out videos that get the views, get the traffic. Otherwise, it could bugger your channel. Yeah. And so what you find is most long-term YouTubers who've been doing it a while, they establish a brand, they build it up, get, you know, thousands of subscribers, and then they'll set up another channel, which becomes their kind of... what becomes their original channel in many respects, yeah, the things they enjoyed doing, being a bit more experimental, so where you're not motivated by views and traffic. Mm. And that is kind of what Abroad Perspective is. Not that I've neglected Abroad in Japan, it's still very much in action. But we, as you said earlier, one of the reasons you're down here is you're doing your subscription box.
Yeah.
Stationery, right?
Yes, stationery, Japanese stationery.
Neko Neko Post.
Neko Neko Post.
Cat Post.
Cat Post.
Wonderful. When I'm going to bring out my own rival, Inu Inu Post, no. Dog Post. And we joked about in the last episode what an Abroad in Japan subscription box would look like. And Stony Brooks from Nashville says, "Hey guys, loving the podcast. Hope Charlotte is doing well. Poor old Pete, go on holiday. He's greatly missed. Things that you can add to your subscription box include bad English stationery, Natsuki's empty cigarette packages.
I like that.
Kumamon of the month. Kumamon of the month? What even is that?
Like a figure, a different Kumamon figure every month.
Kumamoto's beloved mascot. A packet of dried ramen and temporary tattoos of Japanese characters that look neat to the untrained eye, but are actually random things like charcoal grill. Ariana Grande would love that. A reference to Ariana Grande's ill-fated tattoo last year. Oh. What was she write? Nichirin.
Shichirin.
Seven rings, right? Yeah. Never album, but it means small charcoal grill.
Oh, that's such a shame.
Terrible shame.
What were the chances?
I was sad about that when she buggered up her tattoo. I mean, most Japanese people didn't really mind. Because
they just thought it was cute. Yeah, they showed a Japanese tattoo.
Everybody messes up kanji. Yeah. Everyone else bullied her relentlessly, and I remember reading that she was going to give up studying Japanese as a result.
That's so sad.
That is sad. I hope she's carried on. But there you go, the Abroad in Japan subscription box.
What a deal.
I'm not sure how enthusiastic people would be about receiving Natsuki's empty cigarette packets. And Natsuki only smokes about one pack a day, so that would limit the amount.
Oh, dear.
Suppose by the end of each month, we can make 30 Abroad in Japan boxes.
Very limited supply.
30 bespoke boxes. I still propose the idea of photos of Pete Donaldson, but each to their own. We like to kick off these podcasts with a story sent in by you guys, an interesting story. And one of the stories we get a lot, Charlotte, are people who have had run-ins with cults in Japan.
Dear. Yeah.
Have you ever run into a cult? Or anything?
I've had a few people try to recruit me. It's always a random, like, old lady on the street. She looks so, like, unassuming and kind. And she's like, "Oh, sumimasen." And you go up to her like, "Oh, what does this sweet little old lady want?" And then she just tries to convince you to join her cult.
Oh, God.
And gives you, like, information pamphlets.
They're pretty friendly, though, aren't they?
They are nice, yeah. It's not, like, a scary experience. It's just like, oh, dear, what have I gotten myself into?
Yeah, absolutely.
Biscuit Lady. She was a good example of the type of lady. Yeah, try to bring you into the cult.
Oh, yeah, from the Journey Across Japan, the third video. Yeah, that was a bit weird. She was definitely in some sort of religious cult, I believe.
That would have been my guess.
The way she would not stop trying to lure me back to her house to some sort of weird impromptu party. Anyway, we got one from Keith from Toronto. He says, "Hi, Chris and Charlotte, a long-time listener, first-time writer. I took a solo trip to Japan in October 2018 during the reading week break of my last year of college, and I was planning to go again in 2020 before the pandemic happened. I thought now would be the perfect time to write in, as while I was in Osaka, I ran into you and Charlotte on one of the walkways right underneath Ebisu Bridge in Dotonbori." Do you remember that? I don't know. I must say.
During Journey Across Japan, I was in Osaka.
So we run into Keith.
Was that after we had drunk a lot?
I was either drunk. I mean, at that point, that was the middle bit of Journey Across Japan, so my head was broken.
I do remember talking to a few viewers.
I do remember speaking to a chap around then, and that was you, Keith. That's awesome, though. We chatted for a couple of minutes, Keith continues, and then you were off to get some more shots for Journey Across Japan while you were filming. It was quite surreal for me to run into you both, as I'd been watching all the Journey Across Japan videos up to that point before in my bed in my capsule hotel. Cool. That's cool. And of course, Keith, Pete Donaldson would have been there as well. You would have got the full set. Although maybe
he must have been off, though.
Pete has a habit of just running off and doing Pete things, and then you see him 10 minutes later. A few days before this, though, I had a bit of an unusual, albeit unpleasant, experience riding the bullet train from Tokyo to Kyoto. While we were waiting for the train to arrive, an elderly Japanese woman approached me and started speaking in English, asking where I was from and what my plans were in Japan and Kyoto, if I was a student, etc. We made some small talk for about 15 minutes before our train arrived. I was pleasantly surprised by this encounter, as it was one of the only conversations I had during my whole trip, since I went by myself. Once we were approaching Kyoto, the woman found me at my seat and handed me a piece of paper with the name, address and phone number of a friend of hers in Kyoto. She told me to call the number when I arrived at Kyoto Station and that the man would pick me up and I could stay at his house. I took the paper, thanked her and got off the train at Kyoto as she stayed on for another stop down the line. I was very suspicious at this point. I didn't call the number or go to the man's house. I just went straight to my hotel and continued with my plans in Kyoto. What? I wonder what would have happened if I'd phoned the number and would it have been a unique once-in-a-lifetime experience, or would I have been initiated into a cult, or worse? Do you think this was just a hospitable, friendly group of elders looking for someone to practice their English with and show around Kyoto, or something more sinister like a cult? Thank you for your time, Keith from Toronto. What's the verdict? What do you reckon?
I feel like inviting him to stay like at their friend's house, that doesn't really sound like a cult. I feel like they were probably, maybe they were just friends that were studying English together, and she thought that her male friend would like someone to practice English with.
I don't know, there's better ways of doing it, isn't there?
Well, surely, yeah. But this doesn't feel like a cult situation to me. I don't know. I've never had anything like this before. I've never had someone hand me someone's number and say you can stay at their house.
It is sad that, a lot of the people over messaging these stories to us have kind of been saying that every time there's an encounter with a stranger, is it something to do with a cult?
Well, it's a fair guess.
It is a fair guess.
It's really hard to say in this case.
Because people here are quite shy and people don't like to bother you in Japan, right? Unless you're, sitting in a restaurant or a cafe and a worker might strike up a conversation. But for someone to approach you like that and then to actively track you down on the train, that is a little bit suspicious. Next time, Keith, if it happens again, go for it. Let us know.
Don't say that.
Let us know what happened.
Don't give him sketchy advice. I think he made the right choice.
Yeah. I can attest to doing the same thing if I was in that position.
Yeah, surely.
Now, it came across an interesting article this week, and it relates to, obviously, with the coronavirus situation, it's led to some bizarre things happening across Japan, like kind of knock-on effects. And actually, Pete and I, the other day, in a few episodes back, we talked about a hotel in Tokyo that's giving away rooms for free.
Is that the one that films you?
No, that's that's another one. Oh. A far more sinister one. The one where they film you is in Fukuoka. You stay overnight and they stream your video. They stream you.
Yeah, you can stay for free, or it's like 1 yen.
The idea being they monetize the video of you in the room and your ad revenue pays for it. I mean, I don't know what happened to that hotel. That was like 6 months ago.
I can't believe many people would agree to that. I certainly wouldn't.
It's a little bit shady.
It's horrible. What's the deal with this one? Why can you stay for free?
So a new hotel opened in Yurakucho, I think, just about a stop from Tokyo Station. Really central area, really great. It's near Ginza. And they opened the hotel, but no one was coming because there's no bloody tourists at the moment, right? So what they did is, rather than shut the hotel or close it down temporarily, they left it open and they've enabled people to stay for free. But all you've got to do is shout it out on your social media.
Really? Anybody?
Anybody. Not like, doesn't have to be a YouTuber or a Twitter person or an influencer. Anybody.
It's a pretty good deal.
So why aren't you staying there?
Didn't know about it.
Are you going to stay there now?
Possibly.
And you
I
get,
feel like there's a catch.
And if I remember, you get like a free plate of salmon
what?
As well.
A free plate of salmon?
It wasn't salmon, it was like mackerel, I think.
You get,
so you get a free plate of mackerel. So if you like mackerel and free hotel rooms, that's the place to be. And I've been staying in a hotel recently in Tokyo that's about half the price of what it normally is.
Yeah, same. I've noticed that.
Because the lack of tourist hotels have had to really fight for the number of people. So that's a kind of a good thing, I guess.
Not only tourists, the business travellers as well aren't travelling anymore. They're doing everything online. So like businessmen that would normally use the business hotels, right?
Absolutely.
They're not going either. So there's like...
It's all a bit of an economic...
Nobody staying there.
Economic disaster on the horizon, really. A lot of these hotels... That, you know, they built so many hotels in the run-up to the Olympics because they're expecting a boom in tourists and everything.
The exact opposite.
And now
happens.
It could not have been worse. They've gone from 30 million to just zero.
Yeah. 90, 100,
like was I think it was 97% drop in tourists.
Jesus.
I don't know where the 3% came from.
Yeah, how'd they get in?
Exactly. But no, it's really quite ominous and worrying. And there's not been a single one of my Japanese friends who's not been untouched by, who's not. He's not been affected by this.
Right.
He's seen a massive drop in their business. One of the weirdest things to happen, I was reading this week about the Nara deer. As you're aware, in Nara, there's
Nara.
About, 900 deer that roam around the park.
Yeah.
And it's a great place if you like deer. It's quite surreal just walking through this park in front of the temple and the shrines and just having 900 deer roam around.
I love that park.
It is pretty cool.
Yeah.
And the reason they... follow people around is, of course, for those delicious, tasty, nutritious rice crackers. So apparently 13 million tourists usually visit Nara Park every year. And the number of rice crackers sold amounts to 20 million.
Oh my God.
And the 900 deer in the park usually eat something like 60 rice crackers per day on average. But in the absence of tourists, the deer have been getting increasingly desperate and have been... wondering where the hell the crackers are.
Is nobody feeding them? Like the people at the shop aren't just giving them the crackers.
I think there are people. I did read that people are giving them crackers. But
just not as many as usual.
You can't fill in for millions of tourists, can you? Unless the whole town gets together and starts feeding the deer.
I hope there's something else they can eat.
Well,
what do deer eat normally? Surely not rice crackers.
They typically eat grass.
Yeah, can't they just graze on the grass though?
They say that in many ways the lack of tourists, the lack of rice crackers has been good for the deer.
Must be healthier.
Well, the crackers aren't
surely
nutritious, but they're also making them a bit fat and lazy, I think. And so some of the deer who are desperately addicted to crackers have escaped and started roaming the town a bit more and going a bit further afield.
In search of crackers.
In search of crackers. In January this year, before the drop in tourists, about 72% of the deer were recorded in the park during the day, right?
Right.
But in June, this dropped to 50%.
Wow.
And if you look at the nighttime, 56% of the deer were in the park in January. Now it's gone down to 34%.
Where's
so a 20% decrease.
Down in the city, wandering the city.
Roaming the streets of Nara in search of tasty crackers. But interestingly, the number of deer sitting on the grass during the day has increased from 20% to 60%. And apparently when deer eat grass, it's supposed to be good for them. It's through a system called rumination, which requires a lot of rest and whatnot. They kind of need to sit down on the grass and relax.
They're healthier now then.
So returning to a healthy diet in some respects.
Aw, they should stop feeding the deer those crackers. I feel bad for them. They love them, but it's like giving cats treats.
It is a slippery slope.
It's not good to give them so much.
I remember the first time I went there, my first year, I went with a friend and he bought some rice crackers and I was going to take some photos of him eating the deer.
Yeah.
Sorry, eating the... Oh, God.
Jesus. My God.
Getting ahead of myself.
Fast.
I haven't had dinner. That's all I'm thinking. I was going to take some photos of my friend feeding the deer crackers. And he like fed one and then all of a sudden there was like 8 or 9 deer around him. And they were tearing at his clothes. He was like screaming. He was like, oh, my God, help. And all the deer were like assaulting him. And we got quite ominous and quite scary quite quickly.
I feel like most of them are really well-mannered. Lots of them will bow at you for a cracker. Mm. They know that they have to bow for a cracker.
That's right. I don't know who started that. But yeah,
I don't know, but it works.
You hold out the cracker and then they bow.
Yeah.
They bow three or four times and then you give them the cracker.
It's really cute.
It's pretty cool. But that got out of hand. Like, they just assaulted him. And it got pretty messy. So word of advice, if you're in Nara one day when Japan is open again, be careful how many crackers you hold in your hands, because it could lead to a real horror show. But have you noticed any other big changes in Japan as a result of the coronavirus? What have you personally seen, do you think? Other than Tokyo being a heck of a lot quieter.
Yeah,
we look at somewhere
really
like
weird.
Asakusa, which is one of the most touristy districts in Tokyo. It's just a ghost town at the moment. Even Shibuya Crossing is pretty damn quiet by the standards of Shibuya. It's all a bit weird. And when I ride the bullet train down here from Sendai, nobody's on the bullet train.
Oh, the bullet train being empty is the best part. It's so easy to get a seat now. I usually had to wait a couple hours at the station for a free train, but now I can on right away. And I'm usually the only one in my carriage. Yeah.
You could throw a party. All to yourself in the carriage.
All carriage to myself. That's about it, though, really. I guess that's the only changes. Yeah, it's nice. I'm liking Tokyo with less people.
It is a bit odd.
At least one good thing has come out of all of this. We've gotten to enjoy the big cities with less crowds, which is cool.
In a selfish kind of way, absolutely. Yeah. You do feel like you've kind of got Japan to yourself a bit.
Yeah.
But no, I do worry about friends in business. Like I've got... I've made a video about a sushi restaurant recently and they've seen something like a big drop, a halving of customers coming
half.
In. I've got a friend who owns a Wagyu steak restaurant. He's seen a huge drop as well. I think Natsuki's had less customers coming in, which doesn't make sense. People need haircuts. What are they doing?
Do you think it's because they're not going into the office, so they feel like they don't have to look good? People just like growing out their hair.
It's possible. Could see a whole new wave of different hairstyles.
Yeah, you'd think this wouldn't be affecting a hair cutting business all that much.
But even that's, that's worrying.
Yeah.
What's Natsuki going to do? And Natsuki was already in a dicey situation anyway, because for those of you who don't know, good friend Natsuki runs a beauty salon doing hair and things, and he was already affected living in the countryside, right? And you've been to Natsuki's hair salon, and know how stylish it is.
Yeah, it's
really
cool
nice. Salon, right? It's a lovely place.
And they're really good at doing hair.
And you get to meet Natsuki. But it's because he's in the countryside... And where the population is already going off a cliff, it's already been affecting him the last 5 years. I think he's seen his business go down gradually, and this has just been another blow to it. It's been a real bad year for Natsuki as well. And I think Ryotaro as well has been affected. Ryotaro does seminars throughout Japan, teaching businesses how to handle foreign customers and how to handle them. Is Ryotaro the best man to teach people that? Don't know. We'll see how abrasive and evil Ryotaro is. He's had I think less seminars as well because businesses haven't needed it, and also the idea of having a seminar hasn't seemed so attractive. So yes, it's not a good year for a lot of people, and it's all rather bad. But at least the deer are getting fit. Yeah. Oh yay.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row, dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us. MintMobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 531.24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with Plush Care. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify.
Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hey, Prime members. You can listen to this show ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the Amazon Music app today.
We now turn our attention, though, to the fax machine, because you are here for a short time, Charlotte. In fact, this is your last time on the podcast ever. Before you are ceremoniously thrown out the window, like all of our guests on the podcast, which is a ritual. I've only just determined. I thought it'd take some time to interrogate you and question you with some questions sent in by our listeners. And we start with Terence, who says, "Hi, guys. What's it like?" The inevitable question. "What's it like dating Japanese men? What are some differences compared to dating men from other parts of the world? Which parts are better? Which parts are worse? I'm not sure if either of you can answer this." Well, I can't answer it. But I feel it's more probably likely that Sharla will be able to help us out. Thanks and have a nice day, Terence. No, I've not dated any Japanese men. And I don't think Pete has either. So you are well placed for this, Sharla. What are the pros and cons? Your experience?
Well, I haven't dated a Japanese guy in quite a while. I guess the last time was in my early 20s, so over 10 years ago. Mm. I've dated probably 3 or 4 Japanese guys my entire life. Really depends. If they're someone who's lived overseas, like outside of Japan, I can say that, you know, there's not really that many differences to dating someone who has that experience overseas. I feel like they kind of adopt a more Western personality. But the Japanese guys that I dated that were just purely Japanese had never left the country. One of the things that I didn't like was that they're completely against like holding hands or kissing or hugging in public. Holding hands. Yeah, I dated this one guy and we were out for a walk at night. It was midnight in the countryside and there's nobody around. Maybe a car would drive by every 20 minutes or so. And he refused to hold my hand. I'd go to hold his hand. He'd be like, "No, it's embarrassing." There was nobody around. It was so annoying. I would say that was definitely the one thing that really bothered me because I didn't understand. Like, surely I can see why they wouldn't want to make out, like, at the station or something.
I would certainly get heads turning in Japan, right?
Right, but something as little as holding hands, I felt like that was something that was hard for me to really understand the reasoning behind, so that always became a problem.
Well, I mean, my experience with relationships is there's just not that much affection. It's very different to the West. And, you know,
even when you're, like, I don't think, out of the public.
Well, I don't think there is a right or wrong answer to that. But, like, how romance is viewed in Japan is very differently to how it's viewed in the West, right?
Yes, very different.
I find it's a lot more serious and, you know, a lot more to the point. In Japan, right? People want to know where they stand. And what was that culture where you tell people you like them on the first or second date? What's it called?
Kokuhaku.
Yeah. That's where you basically
just where you like tell somebody that you like them. Like you don't date. You kind of just like go up to them. You've never talked in your life and you just say, "I like you. Go out with me."
Which doesn't work. Yeah. It just scares you. If someone did that in the UK, you'd be like, "Oh, I need to go over here now."
Yeah,
it's a bit too full on.
Yeah,
but yeah, I don't know. It's all a bit different.
As for parts that were better, it was always really interesting to date someone from another culture because you learn a lot. It was awesome. We got to speak Japanese. I learned a lot of language.
And did it help you feel more integrated into Japan at all?
Yeah, because they would introduce me to their friends. I would make lots of Japanese friends really easily, met their families, learned how to cook Japanese food. Like, there were tons of plus sides as well. But, in general, I found it really hard to find someone who was compatible because of the big cultural differences, like showing affection and stuff like that. For me, it was a bit too different.
That's right. Fair enough. Interesting. It's a tough topic in many ways. I have some strong opinions on it. I mean, I'm not going to lie. I haven't seen it work that often really well.
Yeah, and I find when
I'll be blunt. Like I've been here 8 years. I know a lot of people who are in intercultural relationships, and
right.
you know, some of them go perfectly. It's brilliant.
Yeah.
But I've seen a lot of them fail pretty badly, and I've seen a lot of unhappiness because of the cultural divide.
It's not easy.
It's not.
At first, it might feel like really exciting to learn all about a different culture, but sometimes there's just some key differences that are so different that no matter how hard you try, you just can't get over them because you were raised one way and they were raised another. And it takes a lot of compromise. So if you're not up for that, it can be really hard.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I was in one relationship for almost 2 years with a Japanese girl, and it was really fun at first, the cultural aspect, getting to know each other, discovering things. They just got really serious, and a lot of the fun was drained out of it really quick, and I don't know. Nice person. We're still friends and whatnot, but yeah, it wasn't for me. But thank you very much for answering that, Charlotte, in a way that Pete and I couldn't do. Hey, Chris and Charlotte, I've been enjoying both your channels for years now as someone with a love of Japanese culture. Thank you very much. You've both been in the world of YouTube for a long time, but I was wondering if you ever regretted doing it, and if you were to go back and start over, would you have done anything differently, or would you have done it at all? Many thanks to you both. Lucy from London. Would you have done anything differently? Would you have done it at all? The world of YouTube.
I certainly don't regret doing it. I've gotten so many cool experiences from being a YouTuber. So yeah, definitely zero regret there. As for doing anything differently, I don't know. You go back and you look at your first videos and they're horribly embarrassing, but I don't know. I feel like that's all part of the journey. I don't think I would have told myself to start off with really good videos off the bat or something. I think it's kind of charming to have some really rough, embarrassing videos from years ago that people can look back on and see how you've grown. So No, I don't think I would have done anything differently. How about you?
I mean, I've not regretted doing it. I've always wanted to do something like this. I feel very grateful and lucky, really, to do something that I love. Never thought I'd be in this position. I don't think I would do anything differently, to be honest. I'm kind of happy with all how it turned out. I didn't really start doing YouTube properly full time until I was 3 years into it.
Right. About the same as me.
About the same as you, yeah. And I feel very grateful to do it. I mean, I it's weird because you kind of have to make up your own direction with YouTube, right? You can kind of go in any direction. And I'm always on the hunt for new ideas. The thing that annoys me, I've never had a point where I felt like quitting. The only time I felt a bit worried was, I think in 2017, when there was the adpocalypse thing, where videos of mine were just getting demonetized for no reason.
Yeah, that was frustrating.
Suddenly I was worried because I had no money to live off or make videos, and like everything was going downhill. And that was the point where I thought, uh-oh, now I'm stuffed. But other than that, it's been a pretty good ride, really.
Yeah, yeah. I can say the same, really, about the same experience.
The thing that annoys me, I don't get that many hate comments anymore, which is a shame because I love them so. Always good fun. The thing that annoys me is every now and then someone writes, "He's run out of ideas." That's the comment. If you want to know the comment that triggers me the most, it's the one where they go, "Oh, he's run out of ideas."
Though, because if you had run out of ideas, you wouldn't be making videos, would you?
I think I first got it in like 2014. "Oh, he's run out of ideas."
2014.
Like, I was like, "Oh, have I?" And every year, there's always someone like, "He's run out of ideas." It's like, "I haven't, have I?" In the last few videos, I've driven across Japan, ridden on a bullet train, been in a love hotel, you know, sushi restaurants. The idea is just to keep things fresh and original. And I haven't run out of ideas. Bastard. Hello, Chris and Charlotte. I love both your YouTube contents and listen to the podcast. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
I bet Pete is off somewhere hungover.
Probably a good guess.
I hope so. I hope he's enjoying his holiday. It's well earned. He does like four different podcasts. He's got the Abroad Japan podcast, Luke and Pete's show, Football Ramble, and the Wrestle Me podcast.
Does he get a holiday from all of them this week?
Holiday from everything. Amazing. So well done to him. But before I ask the question, I just want to say to Charlotte that in high school, when I was in Japanese class in year 10, my teacher actually showed us a video from your channel. You were in the park full of deer.
I forgot
the name
video.
Of the park. Oh, that's cool.
Nara Park.
That's awesome. And I was so happy that I knew your channel because I watched your content a lot back then. My teacher also watched your content as well.
That's really cool.
I'm yet to hear about Chris's content being played in the classroom. I don't think yours is child-friendly enough. Given year 10 is pretty much 17-year-olds, put in perspective. What? Why is my free publicity? I must admit, I do get people from university or school saying they like their teachers shown
that's
the Avoid
really
Japan
cool.
show.
I always love that. I love it when people tell me that. Probably have only heard it maybe 10, 20 times over the years.
It depends on the video I've made. If it's like something like the tsunami documentary, then yeah, great.
Yeah.
But if it's just me swearing in a room, which is the other 80% of the videos.
Probably not their first choice for their
lecture.
That's
a little bit awkward, the idea of people sitting in a room watching that. Anyway, here's the question. Ash says, when I got to high school, I had the opportunity to go on a homestay trip to Japan. However, I couldn't make up my mind as I wanted to wait until me and my boyfriend at the time graduated high school so we could go on a trip together. I just couldn't make up my mind if I wanted to go then and there. And he was given the opportunity to go because he was a year above me. It turns out I didn't take the leap and ended up waiting for the chance again. He graduated and I broke it off with him. And I'll always be sad that I missed the potential adventure about what life is like in a homestay in Japan. Oh. I'm 20 now. My love for Japan is still present. I've never been and I feel there's no opportunity like this that will ever come again. So here's the question. Is a homestay normal for people my age? I heard about studying abroad later in my degree offered at my university. It's an internship kind of job. Is that any similar to a homestay? I might have to do some research, but I'd love to hear what you guys have to say. Ash from Melbourne.
She's only 20.
Yeah, so 20 is not...
She's still quite young.
That's not old. Bloody hell.
She says, for people my age, I was expecting her to be like, I don't know, at least in her
the
40s
old
or
age
something. But
of 20.
No, I don't think any age is too old to enjoy a homestay.
What about 70?
No.
What about 80?
Why would that be too old?
What about 90?
I think anybody could enjoy a homestay. It's a really great way to exchange cultures and stories with people. I just recently did a farm stay where I stayed over at a farmhouse and I learned how to pick edamame, and I'm 34, so if I can enjoy it, surely you can at 20. Yeah, don't worry about your age at all. I think that's fine. If you come across an opportunity, I really think you should do it. As for if the internship will include a homestay, I'm not sure. That will be all up to your university's program. You could possibly be staying in a dormitory, that's common, or maybe you'll be renting out your own apartment. If they don't mention a homestay, then it probably won't include that. But you can always just do like a one night homestay type experience like I did at the farm if you do come to Japan.
Oh, I've done a homestay once and didn't enjoy it. It's not for me.
Well, you didn't like it?
Nope.
Really?
Just felt trapped on someone's house. There was no escape.
Oh.
Just a
bit
weird.
How long were you there?
One night. Too many nights.
Oh dear.
It was just, I don't know. They were a lovely person and we had a nice dinner. But it was like 10 o'clock and I was like, I want to go now. But I couldn't because it was a homestay. And I feel like when you do a homestay in Japan, you've got to do it by their rule book. You can't really do what you want. Their plan is made up, right?
Yeah, that's very true.
And they're good. Like, that's a good thing. They're very hospitable, folks that do it. But yeah, just not for me.
That's interesting.
But I would encourage you to go, Ash, and to finally go to Japan.
It's some of my best memories come from the homestays I've done. So yeah,
maybe I should give it another go.
Highly recommend it. I don't know.
Maybe
don't sound like the right person. This is not for you.
Don't like being in a house with people.
that could be your first problem.
Yeah, that's pretty big problem if you're going on a homestay. Got one from Cedric from the Netherlands. Hello, Chris and Charlotte and Pete, wherever he may be listening from. I'd be amazed if Pete's listening to this he's in a pool somewhere on a lilo, spinning around, drinking beer. I hope you're doing well. My name's Cedric from the Netherlands and I've been a fan of both your channels for quite a few years now, and I've been listening to the podcast since the pandemic started.
Thank you.
Now more than ever, have both of you been an inspiration for my future travels to northern Japan.
Ooh.
My prior trip to Japan back in May 2019, we didn't really invest much time in northern Japan as we drove from Tokyo down the southwest. We didn't think there would be much interest, many things of interest in the north, but how wrong we could be. Your videos on northern Japan lately have been an eye-opener, and I can only say with regret that we should have gone up north as well. Now my question to you, what is the one place in northern Japan that you think is a must-see? Also, I have a suggestion for a podcast, a suggestion to a few podcasts back when you mentioned wanting ideas for Abroad in Japan merchandise. What about checking out the Abroad in Japan soundboard for ideas? I personally think it holds a lot of potential for merch. Keep up the great work, and I hope to see Shana back again at some point. She's a great guest. Cedric from the Netherlands.
Thank you, Cedric.
That's very kind of you, Cedric. I mean, you can't have it all, though, in one holiday.
Yeah, I think it's good that you focused on
Southwest.
Just a few areas for your first trip. You don't want to to try and cram it all in and be rushing around.
And most people do that as well. They go to Southwest, like Kyoto, Osaka, Hiroshima.
And Northern Japan is huge, so you want a good chunk of time to be able to explore it, I would say.
But where? What is the one place? And that's a really hard question for me, because it's, I can't really think of one place.
If I had to give one thing, I might say Tsurunoyu Onsen in Akita Prefecture. I've been to lots of onsen resorts, and it was probably the most impressive one. I think it dates back to the 1600s. It's quite old. And it's just beautiful. There's eight different public baths that you can go in. Some of them are for both male and female. So if you're with your friends or your partner, you can go in together. That's pretty cool. And kind of rare. It's hard to find onsen that have that. And they're famous for their milky bath. So once you get in the bath, nobody can see anything. So if you're kind of uncomfortable being naked in public, it could be a good option. But just in general, the whole onsen resort is really beautiful. The accommodation you stay in is really old. It's a really old traditional building. Just the whole place is gorgeous. I've got a video on it from years back when I went on my Charlotte in Japan channel. Check that out if you want to see what it's like. But yeah, that would probably be my one recommendation if I had to pick one.
I am going to say Hachinohe, maybe, in Aomori. In Aomori, because you've got the biggest morning market in North Japan every Sunday. And you've also got the Yataimura, the nighttime kind of stands. And I know you've been there. We went there on the road trip, didn't we? And I went there with Ryotaro, made some videos, which you can check out. But I think that's a cool place. Aomori City's all right. You can get a nice fish market. But yeah, I mean, Sendai as well is a good jumping off point. From there, in 2 days, you could go to Matsushima Bay. See a beautiful
Matsushima
bay.
I forgot about that.
Nice temple.
Matsushima's nice.
And also get a train going the opposite direction, about an hour, into the mountains of Yamagata to Yamadera Temple, which is a really picturesque, beautiful temple out in the mountains. So Sendai is a good jumping off point in that respect.
But that's true.
Yeah. It's a difficult one, though.
Yeah, if you have a car, I really recommend driving around the Tsuruoka area in Yamagata. Depending on the season. You don't want to do that in the winter.
Mount Haguro.
Yeah, Mount Haguro area. It's just really nice. Really, lots of really old traditional houses. And the rice fields are gorgeous in the fall.
Absolutely.
Some nice scenery.
I'm going to plug the Abroad in Japan website map. If you go on the Abroad in Japan website, as well as seeing the glorious soundboard that you mentioned, Cedric, there's also a map of Japan, and on that map we've got dots or like locations where every single video has been filmed. And I think that's a really good way to find ideas, right?
Yeah,
so you can see a little area, you can click on it and see where Ryota and I have been or something. So I recommend checking that out, and I will go back and listen to the soundboard and mine it and steal ideas from the soundboard. I love that soundboard, forget about that. Got one from Parker. It says, "Hi, Chris and Charlotte. I hope you're both doing well. My name's Parker, and I'm currently anticipating the JET program, the Japan Exchange Teaching Program application for 2021 to open soon. I've only ever spent 1 week in Japan, mostly because my study abroad plans were trashed by the pandemic. I've heard plenty of stories of what the job is like, but I haven't heard nearly as much about people's lives outside of the job. So, since both of you worked as English teachers in Japan, I was wondering if you could tell me a bit about how you spent your time outside of the classroom. Things like making friends, participating in hobbies, travelling, etc. Thank you both for all you've done with the channels. Even if I didn't get to study abroad last spring like I had planned, during quarantine, I've been able to experience lots of Japan through your videos, which has been a huge help for me. Sincerely, Parker." Thank you very much, Parker. That's very kind of you. And I'm glad the videos have been a nice little escape for folks that weren't able to visit Japan this year. What did you do then when you were working as an English teacher?
Wasn't part of the JET program. I worked at like private English schools for about a total of 3 years.
Right.
Actually, up where I live now in Morioka in northern Japan. At the time, it was very snowy up there. Half of the year, the town was covered in lots of snow. So that kind of limited what I could do outside of class. I was happy if I could make it to class and back safely for half the year. But the rest of the time, I spent a lot of time hanging out at the local university. Mm. I had made some friends there, and they invited me to just come hang out on campus. So I would go there, and we would like mountain bike together. I was learning how to like do tricks on a mountain bike.
Why didn't I see any of these tricks on Jenny Project?
We didn't have good bikes. They were a little sketchy. Yeah. Probably would have broken it further.
Trick I did was falling face first off the damn bike.
Driving into a pole.
Oh yeah, I drove into a pole, didn't I? That was fun. I really enjoyed that.
But yeah, as for making friends, I found hanging out at the local university was a really good way to do that. Even if you don't know anyone there to start off with, if you just like go there and sit on campus, somebody is going to come up and talk to you and wonder what the random foreigner is doing on campus. So yeah, find local universities. What else did he ask about? Hobbies, friends, traveling. I didn't travel much. I was working all the time because I wasn't in the JET program. I was just working at private English schools. I worked at 7 different schools at once. So I really didn't have much time for travel. So for my first 3 years in Japan, I didn't travel anywhere at all. How about you?
No, I didn't really travel much on JET either until I was finished. It's just difficult, especially depends where you live, like where I was.
Right.
In the middle of nowhere, it was tricky to go to places like Tokyo. You'd need to get a night bus, and that would instantly take a whole night out of the equation and a night back, and that wasn't really good. So I didn't travel much, but I did do a lot. I had a schedule. After the first year, I had like a pretty good schedule. Like Mondays, I volunteered at the Akaiwa in town with a friend, and we had like 10 people there aged from 30 to 70. They were good at English and wanted to chat. Wednesdays, I had my Japanese tutor, Ito Sensei. We hung out. In many ways, we didn't learn much Japanese, just chatted, which is fun, to be honest. I went there to learn, but we just ended up chatting. And you might have seen him in the swear words swear words video. He created the phrase, for fuck's sake. Yeah.
No way.
Legend. And then on Thursday, I met with Natsuki, and I was supposed to teach him Japanese. Teach him English.
Teach him Japanese. Well, yeah.
I was supposed to teach him English, and he was supposed to teach me Japanese. But all happened was we just got drunk and ate yakitori all evening.
Can't imagine that happening.
And then every 3 or 4 weeks, I did another volunteering at another Ikaiwa on like a Saturday or a Sunday in Soroka. So I was very busy. And in my first year, I did nothing. I just sat in my room and studied Japanese. It was really depressing. But I kind of needed to do that to get my Japanese to the point where I could actually make the most of my time in Japan, right?
Yeah,
so I don't regret that in some respects. But yeah, by my second and third year, I loved it. I really had a solid weekly schedule that kept me on my toes. And on the days where I wasn't doing anything, I was scripting and filming videos. So I was always busy. But that's the key, Parker. Just try and get involved with as much stuff as you can. I remember towards the end of my entire time on the JET program, I was picked up by a local magazine with things just going on in the region. The big plane that we lived on was called Shonai. It had Sakata City and Soroka City. And I remember I was on like every other page in it somewhere. Like I was in it for winning a speech contest, which was great because I won third year but failed the second year. I was able to somehow win that. I did like an event. I put on an event at the International Centre teaching English.
Yeah, I used to do that in Morioka too.
And I was just like on all these pages and it made me think, wow, crap, I've actually got quite a lot done the time I've been here. So
volunteer for as many things as you can. Absolutely. Say yes to everything. If people invite you out to things, even if you don't think you'll really be into it, you never know. Definitely. You might meet a new friend. It'll probably turn out well. So yeah, just say yes to everything.
And I remember I did a business event, Startup Weekend, and through Startup Weekend, I met someone from Sendai, a really cool investor who introduced me to Ryotaro.
Yeah.
As well. So like by getting involved with things, you do meet more people, and it's the ultimate networking tool and the ultimate way of really opening doors to your time in Japan and meeting Ryotaro.
What more could you ask
for? What more could you possibly want? Although we all know that if you want to see Ryotaro, you just got to ride the bullet train between Tokyo and Sendai a few times and you'll see him somewhere sitting on his computer. Go and say hello. He'll love it. He'll love it a lot. But for now, that is it, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you, Charlotte, for stepping in for Pete. Hopefully we'll see you again soon. Yeah. Maybe you'll come back one day.
One day when Pete needs another vacation.
When Pete goes on his much-needed holiday, he'll be back. Or when I go, maybe you can stand in for me.
With
again,
Pete.
When I go on holiday. But thank you, Charla. And now you have to go out the window.
All right.
That's discussed.
Bye.
And for now, guys, as always, many thanks for listening to the Abroad in Japan podcast. Keep the stories, questions, comments coming in to abroadinjapanpodcast@gmail.com. We'll be back on Wednesday and Pete will be back from his holiday. I look forward to hearing all about it and what he got up to. But for now, have yourself a great week and we'll see you then. Have a good one.
Bye.
Out the window.
Get out the window.
This was a Stakhanov production and part of the Acast Creator Network.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
I'm Ina Garten. Welcome to Be My Guest, the podcast. One of the best gifts you can give friends is spending time together. But what's even better than that? Cooking with them. On Be My Guest, the podcast, new friends and old stop by my barn for some conversation and great cooking. We talk about food, life, and everything in between. Listen to Be My Guest, the podcast with me, Ina Garten, and join us wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.